I'll never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the second Scanon podcast of 2018. This week, Niall's bowed out, so I'm Darren, and joining me is...
Ronan.
Jason.
Philip.
And Stacey.
And we're going to take a look at sort of the week in Irish film. But first of all, guys, what did you watch this week? So, Ronan?
I've been trying to make good on my annual promise that eventually falls down about halfway through January to make more use out of my movie subscription. So recently I watched Agnes Varda's Daguerreotypes.
Ooh.
Yeah, just off the back of Faces Places.
Have you seen Faces Places?
Yeah, it was at the French Film Festival a couple of weeks ago.
Ah.
Probably the best film of last year for me.
One of.
Certainly one of. It's not out here until March, April or something like that. Really loved it. And Daguerreotypes is more of that kind of thing. I haven't seen much of Varda's like documentary stuff from back around that time. I've seen Walls. But this was really, really good. She just she hones in the local area of where she was living in Paris in, I think, the early 70s. And she did a really great sense of place to it. Absolutely loved it. What else have I been watching this week? Michael Mann's Thief, which I hadn't seen before.
Oh.
Yeah.
Bit of James Garner.
Yeah. Which, no, that wasn't a movie, that was Netflix. And you know, it kind of it falls under where Mann usually does for me, which is he falls down on his scripts sometimes. He's much more of a visualist.
I would agree with that.
Philip wincing.
This is just about a month after you and I recorded our 250 episode of Heat,
which I wasn't allowed to be on. I might add.
That restraining order is still in place.
Jay was banned for having bad thoughts about Heat.
I do have bad thoughts.
You have bad thoughts
about
a lot of
films.
I'm not a big fan.
He's lukewarm on it, let's say.
I saw it when it came out. I saw it come out, I thought it was a masterpiece, and subsequent rewatches over the years have sort of opted down a little.
You've cooled on it.
I certainly have cooled on it. I'm barely lukewarm.
What do you like less about it now than the...
Sorry, another talk about Thief, but let's get into
the
game. Let's
go back to Thief.
I think Ronan kind of nails a good chunk of it. The script is not great. Mm. The celebrated scene between De Niro and Pacino was awful. It's badly written,
it's
badly
awful.
Shot. Yeah, I do.
Oh, wow.
The bank sequence is still great. It's probably the best thing in the film.
Yeah.
But Chino is just ridiculous pretty much all the way through it. I'm unconvinced by the whole thing, really. I think it looks better than it is in the way that Mann films do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always worried that I'm actually afraid to rewatch a lot of older Mann films because I kind of like them and I want to keep it that way.
I have that with Manhunter.
That was probably my first Mann as well. And I really
admire Manhunter more every time I go back.
Yeah, same here.
I'm kind of afraid. I'm actually afraid. I'd say The Insider, which is another one I really want to rewatch. But I'm kind of a little worried because I am not a man's man these days, which Philip always looks like he's going to punch me when I say it. But, sorry. Actually, I've never seen Thief, never really think about it.
Thief is really good. It's got some incredible visuals. Like, James Caan is a criminal safecracker, but he runs a car business, and there are some amazing shots late at night of, like, the light reflecting off the hoods of the cars. It looks incredible.
I can imagine Mann could have very, very
Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful, but then it's let down by a lot of script. I like it overall a lot, but I think That's my issue with Mann, is that his scripts tend to...
I'd probably agree with that.
I get the feeling he doesn't care. He just wants to go off and have fun with his shots. And so,
I'd say digital is three the most of which I'd say in that regard.
I don't think he gives a shit about story. He just wants to convey
visuals. But he's got that sort of visual style, though. I think, generally speaking, like, you know, give or take a Public Enemies, I think
tried to superimpose that style over a period of film.
Over 1930s.
Which made no sense in any real way.
I want to go back and rewatch Public Enemies, to be fair.
I don't ever.
I hate Public Enemies.
You what?
I hate
it.
It was probably the same.
Dreadful. And I had no desire to ever revisit it.
I did find the digital over sort of 1930s era.
I found it really disconcerting and I couldn't get past it. And then when I kind of got used to it, then everything else came into focus. Like, yeah, I don't watch it anymore.
So, Jay, on that
I
note.
Like it.
I know. Sorry, Joe.
So
this film is supposed to be set up to run into Mann.
Oh, no, I'm getting used to this. I'm going to be in the minority on a lot of things, I'm afraid.
Go on, your curmudgeon.
All right, what have we watched? I went to the IFI who showed, as part of the bigger picture, Ordinary People, Robert Redford's film, which for years had my kind of blood boiling as a beat, mentionable the best picture of the Oscars. But It's marvelous. Like it's like I've seen it about 4 or 5 times.
Go so far as to say it's extraordinary.
I would. I think it's terrific. I would go so far as to say that. It's a proper kind of melodrama, weepy, deals a lot with grief, but very sensitive film. Very, and it's part of a kind of mental health presentation. And they're saying, particularly for its time, it's actually quite good as an intro. That it actually kind of, relatively speaking, stands up even today as a kind of very sensitive portrayal of somebody that deals with grief and has mental health issues and suicide thoughts and stuff like that. So even in that regard, it's actually quite good. But it's a terrific cast: Mary Tyler Moore and Donald Sutherland's the parents, and Timothy Hutton as the son. And they're great, and every time at the end of it, like, I'd be in tears. Like, it's devastatingly well done, and it casts a bit of a shadow over quite a lot of films since, like, Good Will Hunting and stuff like that. The kind of therapist,
the arc,
kind of
the
yeah, you know, that kind of thing. But it's really great, and kind of really stands up. Like, it's everything that it was kind of praised for in the '80s, and when it came out, and but it still kind of holds well, and really holds well, like. Fashion aside or whatever, but
yeah.
Like the character,
I mean,
acted,
yeah,
it's
not
great.
Really something we grapple with a lot.
No, and it's
film,
not
so
about
it's
a very much a talking film. Like, it's not, it doesn't really care that much about visuals in a sense. It's not selling anything other than the drama, central drama.
So what you're saying is, if you can get Michael Mann to direct Ordinary People, you'll be all over.
That would be a very interesting film. Lots of shots of the wing mirrors and suddenly get out of car and something like that. I can see that. Yeah. And the other one I'll mention is Drew Barrymore's Whippet.
Oh,
which I'd never seen before.
It's a really good film,
that. It's pretty good, I have to say. I really like it. Ellen Page is great. Like,
Ellen
really
great.
Great
in most things.
Yeah, she is.
Just picks terrible films.
She is, but when she's in something that the material is good for her, she's excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know anything about Roland Irby or any of that kind of thing in America. I didn't know it was even a thing where when they're staying at the start, it has that kind of dodgeball vibe when they have to explain what dodgeball is, you know? It's like what is
it
happening?
It was huge in the 70s. There was a scene in Saturday Night Fever, obviously, where they're all discussed.
But it references very well, a reference to Slapshot, the Newman film from the 70s. I think it's called The Manson Sisters in Whippet, and it's the Hanson brothers, I think, isn't it, in Slapshot. They're kind of just boiling, kind of wrecking the place kind of thing, and I really like that. But it's funny, it's really well directed. I would love to see another Barrymore film. Like, I think it's really good, and it's based on novels, so it's very well adapted, very smart.
Very sweet, good fun.
Yeah, it is, it really is, and it's a great cast, and it's a terrific performance all around. I really like that.
Cool. Phil?
Okay, well, I recently, and I know the debate is whether or not this is cinema or not, I recently started watching the return of Twin Peaks.
Get out of here, Kaya, to cinema.
Go on.
That's what I'm going to miss. Just in anticipation,
in
anticipation of it, I rewatched Fire Walk With Me.
Nice.
And I just find it, even as a Twin Peaks fan, it's something I've had a strange relationship with, because it's trying to impose a bit of narrative clarity on something that didn't necessarily need it.
You think it imposes clarity?
Well, okay, and more narrative structure. Now, my issue
is not because it's building up towards something.
Exactly,
you know,
I suppose there's the idea that what you don't show the audience is perhaps more horrific in their own minds than what you can show. But to the credit of the film, it's pretty damn terrifying.
Yeah,
what happens to Laura Palmer, who and is horrific, and Cheryl Lee, she finally gets to be Laura Palmer because she only ever appears in flashbacks and as a different character, her cousin in the show. But she's just this. It's a wonderful portrayal of somebody who is both a teenager and yet old before her time because of what is happening to her.
Yeah.
She's just doomed from the start. It's heartbreaking, and Ray Wise as her father has never looked quite so evil, and it's it's just pure Lynch nightmare fuel.
It is. I mean, I'm actually quite pleased that it's had a bit of a rehabilitation. The famous story about how, you know, Tarantino of all people came out of the premiere at Cannes saying, you know, let me know when he crawls out of his own ass, from Tarantino.
That's rich.
I love Tarantino.
Oh, the years have really have really been kind to that statement, haven't they?
But
I'm glad that it seems like the criticism has mellowed on it a bit.
Like it. It's just to compare it to his other nightmare fuel, it's no Mulholland Drive, it's no Wild at Heart, it's not
I'd put it up there.
I can't go that fast.
As high as Mulholland Drive, maybe, but I think as a kind of a real stark and visual look at the abuse of women, particularly like which it's always hit that throughout the series show, but it's made explicit in the film of what these men are capable of within the kind of town.
That's why I quite like it so much, because I think that the TV show is in some ways hemmed in by being a TV show, in that it can talk abstractly.
It's on ABC.
It's amazing what they got away with on ABC, but at the same time, you're I think in some ways with the show, you're hemmed in what you can talk about and what you can do. So you can have the brothel and stuff like that. You can talk about the abuse, but you can't actually depict it. And you have like one of the things that really gets me about Firewalk with Me and the show is that there's almost this shift in emphasis. In the show, there's this suggestion that Leyland is influenced by like an evil outside himself, that evil exists in the world and it drags him and it sort of pulls him over and it forces him to do these things. And what I like about Firewalk, and like is a strong word, what I respond to in Firewalk with Me is the way that it inverts that, and it says that maybe there was something in Leyland that responded to that. Maybe Bob, you know, was in some ways a projection of the evil within Leyland rather than Bob being the evil that affected him, if that makes sense.
There is a certain ambiguity about that to it, which is, like you say, it's quite interesting.
It opens with Lynch smashing a TV.
Well, there you go. And it has David Bowie.
Yeah.
Albeit briefly.
Always helps.
I'll just mention one other thing. I rewatched As Good As It Gets.
It's been years.
Yes, it has. And I hate to say that time's not been kind.
I would have guessed that somehow.
There is something fun about watching Nicholson play somebody kind of robbed of his kind of swagger. And Helen Hunt does get a few good moments in it. But the whole thing is just far too pleased with its own screenplay. I think every line is tremendously clever. It's not. And some of them are, but just it rambles. It goes, it's over 2.25 hours long. And it just goes on and on for too long. It meanders. And it's watchable, but no more than
I wasn't the biggest fan of it when it came out, so this kind of pleased me that I was right.
Jay,
I love being right, god damn it.
I love taking pleasure as well.
Sorry, I do.
In like Phil having his sort of impression that they're broken. I still quite like it. Last time I watched it was about 2 years ago, and
I have to say it left me not cold but just unimpressed.
I still like that you made me want to be a better man.
Oh dear, that's kind of an example of a line I'm thinking of, and I say it's too pleasing.
Fine, and people say I have no heart. So Stacey,
who said that?
Lots of people.
Wait, I said that.
They didn't see you standing next to Jay at the time.
It can happen.
But Stacey, so yourself.
Yeah. So I've been very bad at watching things this week. I've been quite busy, but the one thing I did get to was The Post, which is, I think, in the top 10 of this week as well.
It is indeed, yeah. Numero 3.
Yeah, it's grand. Like, I came out thinking, oh, that was, you know, it's grown on me a little bit since I've seen it, because the final scene of The Post is so ridiculous.
It is pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, that I came out going, no, this has fallen down.
I'm not having that.
Yeah.
Would you go so far as to say you had a post hoc reevaluation?
Oh, fine. Yeah, I missed the puns. I'm sorry. Misses, Darren.
But I think you sum it up pretty perfectly there. It is like the ultimate, kind of movie. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
That was a thing that happened for the last 2 hours.
Yeah. Okay, I suspect we're going to talk a lot about The Post, both in the Oscars section and in the top 10.
Oh, sure.
I've plenty to say.
We'll save it for the
An
top 10.
Unqualified rage.
Yes. Masterpiece. 10 out of 10.
Jay's rolling up his sleeves.
Yeah. And for some reason, he's brought a meat cleaver. Myself, I watched Crimea, which is the wonderful Russian propaganda film about the Russian intervention in Crimea in 2014.
Why would you watch this?
It is something to behold. It is.
Does Putin make a guest star or anything?
No, he doesn't wrestle a bear with his bare hands. What's really disturbing about it, so incredibly disturbing about it, is that it's a film that weaponizes pacifism. It's a film that's basically an ode to all the Ukrainians who stood by and did nothing while the Russians came in. And it paints it as this like big pacifist sentiment. It also has a score that it ripped off from Hans Zimmer. It's amazing. There's a climax where they're wrestling for control of a missile launcher while the theme from Batman Begins plays. It is
I was going to say that Hans Zimmer score from Taffin is really influential. Obviously, it didn't touch it.
Sadly, it didn't cast that big a
shadow. Enough.
It's not a good film. It's actually interestingly competently made in terms of like 80s action.
You probably threw a lot of money at it.
That's it, exactly.
That, yes.
You could imagine
it
as Steven Seagal having strong feelings about Russia possibly could have consulted.
He could have turned up.
Yeah, because there are drop kicks in it. For all that it's a movie about like that's an ode to pacifism, there's an unholy amount of drop kicks in it.
You kind of made me want to watch it. That sounds better than The Post. Just to say.
That's wearing on The Post.
There is a really. If that doesn't tell you what this will, there's an 80s style sepia tinted love scene set to flashbacks of like a time where they were together in Crimea, overlaid with a Russian pop song about love and patriotism.
Ah, lads, we got it. That has to win the 250 this week. Sorry. I mean, come on, like,
that's why he watched it.
I watched it. Yes, it is. And then I also rewatched, which was a bit less fun, but a lot more good. Darren used words good.
Yeah.
Was Election at Xander Payne's, because I was downsizing that this weekend, so I want to remember a better time.
Yeah.
I really, really like it. I think it's the forgotten one, along with About Schmidt, because it's obviously before Sideways, but it's very clever, very dark,
like
very
it.
Insightful.
Very
and
dark. Surprisingly dark.
Has Broadwick ever been better?
No, I don't think so. Unless you can, maybe First Bueller's Day Off, that's about it. And even then, he's pretty.
Well, even then, I think there's an element of persona to it. I think like actually,
he's got a lot to
acting.
Do with that, though. I think that's the thing, rather Margaret was in, but he wasn't a huge amount. Like, wasn't.
Oh yeah, or Manchester by the Sea.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. They actually used Broderick as an actor role.
Yeah.
Like,
I will stand up for him in 30 Rock.
I haven't seen him in 30
Rock. In 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Nobody?
I can't
I've seen
him,
but I can't remember either.
He shows up for a couple of episodes.
I was waiting for you to say, I'll stand up for him in Godzilla.
I don't mind that Godzilla. It's better than the new one. I'm just going to say
The worst part is you might be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know if Dolph
is
right.
I think you're wrong, but I think whoever wins, we lose.
Yeah. Fair point.
All right, so having talked about the movies that we've seen this week, let's move into the news. Two big stories this week, the Oscars and the Dublin International Film Festival. So let's start things out on a positive note and begin with this week's Oscar nominations. So
the positive note, is it, Darren? Actually, no, the Oscar nominations are there.
A lot to be happy.
I was really preparing a big hate-filled kind of goddamn the Oscars thing, but it's kind of ruined it by being okay.
Yeah, it's a perfectly cromulent list of nominees.
Yeah.
It's perfectly adequate. Like, there's one film in the Best Picture nominees that I would cut without hesitation. I think
I could have put about three of them.
No.
I think everybody would.
Yeah, but I mean,
second voters apparently.
Yeah, which is astounding. It's primarily a vehicle for giving Gary Oldman an Oscar nomination, which is
and an Oscar eventually.
And an Oscar, yeah.
Most likely at this rate.
Yeah, I'm surprised Franco got cut. Actually, speaking of the best actor,
that didn't take long.
It didn't take long. It was the quick turnaround.
I'm not sure they were that big of fans of Franco. I think it was they were like, I think it was saying, Franco, we're supposed to have to give him something. Oh no, we don't anymore.
We
can't.
I think that obviously hurt him, but
that.
I don't think it was a foregone conclusion.
No,
I would say
comedic
performance.
I think he was on the peripheries all along.
Anyway,
I think
he
was
Dan Zell.
He was pretty good, though.
He is really good.
He is really good.
I thought he would actually get.
And the film is really good as well. Like. The Disaster Artist is a legitimate
I like that.
It is one nomination for its script.
Yeah.
I this is the year that I finally said, okay, Franco's not as bad as I always thought he was.
And
look what happens.
Yeah.
Look what happens. That's the thing. That's how we get rewarded.
Jay,
I know it's not. I know.
Me too.
Yeah, I know.
I was just going to say, Jay, feel free to continue hating Spielberg.
I don't hate Spielberg. I quite like Spielberg.
But no, in terms of the nominees, in terms of Best Picture, in terms of any strong reactions to
Mudbound should be in there.
Yes.
And
well,
Darkest Hour, I haven't seen, so I can't say it shouldn't be in there. But by
any
reason,
Darkest Hour should absolutely not. Be
Three Billboards should be in there.
Yeah. Three Billboards shouldn't
be in
there.
Should not
be
in
the award season.
I would say the post should not be in there. And the rest I have either haven't seen or I'm happy enough with.
I like that we began with it's actually perfectly okay. Listen,
it's
okay.
Cut. The post is fine, and I look and this we Stacey's mentioned and Ronan's mentioned it. It's Spielberg could do four of them a year, I'd say, in his sleep.
Well,
perfectly
did this
okay.
In what, a month and a half while waiting for the special effects on Ready Player One to render.
But then do
it
better.
It shows in
yeah,
a way.
Like, yeah.
You know, it's rushed for no purpose.
Should be rewarded with a Best Picture nomination.
Exactly.
Yes.
That's my point.
Okay.
It's you know, inverted commas serious, so it's the kind of thing
that's not denied about
this
picture. It could be, surely it could have been a better film if they'd waited, and if they're rushing it,
yeah.
reward something for...
But this is the question, right? This happens every year where everybody gets outraged at the Oscars for not nominating. What are the Oscars supposed to be apart from the representation of movies that members of the Academy like?
I know. Listen, there's lots of reasons why to post it there. It's an FU to Trump, it's...
Mm.
It kind of,
it only
you know,
got two nominations.
Yeah, but no, but that's why it's got a picture nomination, though, in the sense that you can put it up there, the kind of liberal Hollywood kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like.
But that's
it,
because it was Peter Bradshaw who pointed out it only, like, for a movie that was, like, F you Trump, like, we can say fuck you Trump. for a movie that was fuck you Trump, it only got two nominations, which surprised me.
That's because it's not very good, though.
That's a combination of the token best picture nomination.
Yeah.
That's the fuck you Trump thing, and Meryl, because, of course.
Because Meryl has to get a nomination every time she's in.
She's
really
good. Working a long
time. Better than most of the movies.
Better
than Into the Woods.
You were all very generous people, that's all I can say.
No, I think
she
does really well to carry what is, for me, the only key interesting thing of it, which is its gender politics, which it does quite well sometimes.
I think the
shoe order
it
is
badly.
It is a little heavy-handed at times, you know. I quite like the shot of her streaming past women looking at her, because it's a nice contrast to the shot before where she walks in to a room full of suited men. And it's a really nice visual contrast, and it's not.
Or even Hanks arriving surrounded by hippies reading Throw Yourself on the Cheek in tie-dye sort of costumes and stuff in case, you know,
the
you
scene
don't get
directly them. Lifted out of what looks like Born the 4th of July.
But no, like I'm quite happy to see the post on it. Like, I mean, and I feel like every year when the Oscars come out, it's always a game of how bad can it be, and is it better than how bad it could have been?
It's better, it is. No, it is. I mean, there's good films in there. Like, there's
no
argument.
There's
no
blind side here. There's no reader here. There's no...
I do genuinely feel very strongly that Darkest Hour is trash and shouldn't be there.
But
on the whole, I'm kind of...
And I would suggest that Three Billboards isn't far off that and will
still
be quickly forgotten
but
in about 3 or 4 years' time.
Well, on the upside, at least it's not frontrunner anymore.
It's probably still
like, it can't be without a director's nomination. Like, I mean, Argo.
I don't know
okay.
if I believe that whole
really?
Thing. Like,
me too.
Argo
is there an express correlation between them, or is it a coincidence?
It's more likely to win if it has a best director nom. And there's two.
It is.
Of the strongest films in that lineup are three. Not strongest, but I suppose
favorite films
are Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Call Me by Your Name. Neither of which have a best director nom.
I don't see Call Me.
No,
by
Call
Your
Me by
Your
Name
at all.
Yes.
That's an outsider.
So. Really, has this race for Best Picture then opened up quite a bit? Is it Shape of Waters to lose?
Shape of Water and Lady Bird, possibly. I mean,
I would love to see.
Yeah, but then Lady Bird, I think, might get a kind of interesting because Greta Gerwig's nominated for director.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a possible kind of signal that, you know, Hollywood is kind of changing or whatever.
Yeah,
I think it has a very
female
and
best director.
I'm only saying that in that context. I haven't seen the film yet, so I don't know how good or
those
people like
it's
it.
Great.
I like it very much. It's one of my favourite on that list.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing it, but I haven't seen it as of yet. But even taking on whether it's good or indifferent or whatever people think of it, I think there's a good chance it might get a sneak in there anyway.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. The best picture is in many ways just a way of signalling a preference as opposed to like
being
an objective. When was the last time the best picture was actually the best picture?
Moonlight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say Moonlight was the best film of that.
Fine.
But no, that I
of the ones nominated,
that
Moonlight
was
there.
That was the
first
time
in
a very long time for me that one of the best films of the year actually won the best picture.
Yeah.
So last year, Darren, just began.
Last year was
literally 1 year ago.
It just feels like it's been 4 years.
It certainly does.
I felt that way about Spotlight as well. I thought Spotlight was the best film nominated that year.
I did, yeah.
I really like
some issues with Spotlight, but anyway.
But Spotlight is fine. Compared
to The Post, it's a masterpiece.
It's a really good newsroom movie, and you can hold it up against The Post.
Yeah.
It's a lot more subtle. It's got a lot more like good depictions.
What about
Russell
Crowe in State of Play?
No, I got any love for that.
I like that film.
Snubbed again for the.
Crowe sitting there with his notepad complaining about the internet. There is good that.
Actually, but Helen Mirren saying, like, fuck you very much.
I
like all of that.
I like Crowe, but sometimes he's just so weird.
I prefer La La Land to Moonlight, just getting that in there.
But
anyway,
you prefer what to Moonlight?
La La Land.
Sorry, I was
you are wrong.
Yeah, you are wrong.
I would agree with Phil. I think
the monster would be wrong.
Really?
Yeah.
We've got two La La Land over Moonlight.
Great film.
I know. And Light Over Land.
And
Strange. I like them both.
I know.
A lot of people do not like La La Land.
That's like Smarty Israelis and the Palestinians.
Tomorrow
from
This escalated. But yeah, this is the thing about like the Best Picture race and the Oscar race every year. It always turns into this highly polarized, highly competitive.
Because there's always one shit film that people
like. Moonlight and La La Land.
Yeah, you could
God say
the same. I like both.
Yeah.
I don't love La La Land.
Yeah.
I like it. I think it's fine.
So is there a conversation akin to that Moonlight versus La La Land race?
But
there's
three billboards.
Yeah, there is no like three billboards was La La Land until McDonagh didn't get a director nomination, and then you. But the issue is you had no Moonlight to that. I don't think.
No. The I would say as far as the Best Picture nominees go, the big surprise for me is how well Phantom Thread did.
Yes. Out of nowhere, really.
And
yeah.
I couldn't
getting
be more
in there and
thrilled.
Director was really surprising.
That was
which
fantastic.
Like,
great
news.
I think that's McDonough there, isn't
it? I
like
it.
Far be it for Jay to be petty and be grudgery.
I think the list for Best Director is the one of the most fascinating.
It is actually.
It's
a
great
line.
I'm really interested.
I was worried up until it was announced they're going to snub Peele. That was the big worry.
Was
yeah.
Because he's got a background in comedy. It's his
debut
film.
Yeah,
and it's really well. That's, I would argue it's really well directed. I know
I
like Get Out
too,
more
actually,
than most
I think
people
it,
here.
I'm fine with that. Like, I didn't rate it as fine as a lot of people, but I think it is well directed. He knows exactly what he's trying to say.
He
gets it across.
Yeah,
he
does.
He
understands the genre.
Yeah,
yeah,
he does.
He
does.
And
he gets that balance right as well.
For a comedy director, he does know his horrors. I only wish for a horror it was scarier.
It's freaked my mother out, which is just the right level of scary for a movie like this. It is though, because it's a movie that you want to be able to watch with, or you want to be able to recommend to family and friends. Horror movies, generally speaking, tend to alienate people. Like my family would never watch a horror film because it would scare them to death.
Yeah.
But Get Out just falls on the right side.
Yeah.
My mom can watch that.
I think that's
and
fine.
Get a jump.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
And I think, and somebody said this, and I think it's probably true. Just because you weren't scared by a horror film doesn't necessarily mean it's not a horror film.
No,
because it is a subjective.
Well, I'm not saying it's not a horror film. It's demonstrably a horror film.
Yeah.
But Jordan Peele is in there.
I'm delighted for him.
Alongside Guillermo del Toro, Greta Gerwig. Christopher Nolan, at long last.
Oh, somebody please think of the white guys. Chris Nolan finally got some real
talking about.
Sorry,
I'm
joking.
Get off the horse, Jay.
I didn't.
And Paul
that.
Thomas Anderson.
Yeah.
Which is
it's a great. It's a
really
great.
The only thing that I thought to wrong about this, and you're going to disagree, Aaron, is a bit of a shutout for the Florida Project, which should have been in there.
Yeah, no.
I think I threw that in there.
I know you didn't like it, so I mean,
I don't bring it up unless you guys bring it up. I'm quite happy. I'm glad that you enjoyed the Florida Project.
I did that. It's great.
Is it Willem Dafoe was the only nomination?
That's
the
only
nomination.
Yeah.
Only one.
Deservedly so.
No, I think
he deserves the nomination.
Oh, yeah.
Just
right,
to be clear.
Yeah.
One
nomination and that's it.
Like, I mean, I would rather have seen, if we're playing the what would you put in instead of Darkest Hour game, I would happily have seen, say, the Big Sick get in. Primarily because that would mean I'd have a Best Picture nominee, right?
I wasn't either.
No, I like it, but I think it's a genre movie. It's not a movie I would have expected to see.
I'm glad to see it in there for a screenplay.
It's
an interesting adaptation. I think it's in a way it's kind of strange that they're writing from their own life, and they're it gets a little self-satisfied sometimes that, you know, it's clearly something they've told around a dinner table a lot of times, and I found myself watching it.
It's a great story, though.
It is. It's a really, really good story, but I found myself watching it being like, you know, this is a great story. I'd love to hear it over dinner. I don't know. To see it in the cinema.
Do you know what? I was going to give you several million dollars. Okay.
Come on, your own dinner table story.
I like that this is Ronan's new test for his movie where it's
not for him to back down.
I don't remember who it was, but it's the question: is this film more interesting than, you know, sitting down with the writer and talking about the story over dinner?
I
take that point, though.
To be fair, it's not.
A couple of days afterwards, though, somebody asked me about it, and I was kind of like, yeah, hang on, let me think about it. What happened in it? And I was kind of like, yeah. It's like, I think it's hard to think about explaining.
And so is Hunter. Hunter's great.
She's fantastic.
Yes.
I was actually disappointed Hunter didn't get a supporting nomination.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
Supporting actress is a strong lineup as well.
I think it is, actually.
I'm absolutely delighted Laurie Metcalf is in for Lady Bird.
Yes.
And Mary J. Blige is the first person to be nominated for acting and for original
singing.
Song.
I deserve. She's great in the
that.
Yeah, considering how many singers become actors or vice versa, it's
Jennifer Hudson for Showgirls wasn't nominated for, not Showgirls. Showgirls is a very different film.
Dream
Girls.
Showgirls.
Showgirls.
Where is he going with this?
Dream Girls.
Does anyone remember Dream Girls? No.
Eddie Murphy probably does because that was the closest he ever came.
Yeah.
What's the story? Isn't the story that they rolled out the advertising for the, was it the Clump?
No, it was Norbit.
It was Norbit. The week before Ballet toileting clothes, and apparently that's what cost him the story.
And Norbert actually got an Oscar nomination for its makeup.
Oh, what a world we live in. But indeed. Somewhere Alan Arkin is very, very happy.
Yes.
But I mean, the supporting
lineup as well. Octavia Spencer nominated again for Shape of Water. Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread. She should have got
another one.
She's pretty great, so I'm kind of like, I'm fine with
that. But the most likely winner at this rate looks like going to be Alison Janney, and we love Alison Janney.
She's hoovering up the awards, and I haven't seen it, but it's about time we recognize her.
I don't know if it's a backlash as such, but a lot of people said I haven't seen the film.
We're going to have an argument at the word backlash, Jay.
Yeah, I know. We need to discuss that at some point.
Yeah.
But
snub.
That she's it screams an Oscar role in terms of its.
Sure.
It's not.
But there's always those roles.
We talked
about this though, where the Oscars don't tend to award, and we talked about how like it's things the Academy like, but they don't award like the best acting or the best film,
the most
or the best
acting.
They award the most acting,
which
is like Gary Oldman.
But I can't talk about it.
You cannot answer
with a tiger while your mouth is in its jaws. But I can't talk about films in that way, though.
I don't know why he sounds like the Cookie Monster.
I can't talk about big acting.
I
just want
to complain. Not good enough.
Yeah. Does that explain then why Frances McDormand is the most likely winner of Best Actress?
Also because she deserves it.
Okay.
She doesn't.
She totally.
She made a really, really good point. I think it was that SAG. She,
yeah, give it
she
to younger people.
Yeah.
Give it to younger people. Give a leg up to those people. And
Saoirse.
Frances has won four brilliant performances.
Yes, I agree with that.
Probably put
so.
Robbie ahead of Saoirse. I really like Daytonya.
I didn't know much about it until I got the trailer and more recently, and it looks phenomenal. I want
to
see it.
It's really great.
It's
phenomenally mean is the issue, though, and I feel like
that's
the
time of this.
It is a phenomenally mean film, and I wonder if that maybe contributed to it getting sort of relatively, not picking up any of the...
Got three nominations here.
Okay, still.
It's
all right. It's
grand.
One more than the Post.
True.
So is anything else sort of jumping out at anybody about the nomination?
I'm really, really happy to see Agnes Varda in there for Best Documentary. Becoming, which should be in there for Best Picture, strictly. But
it'll never happen.
Ever become the oldest ever Oscar nominee, and what I love about it is that she just picked up an honorary Oscar, which she said is kind of like a child.
They've
given her a real Oscar nomination. I really hope she wins, because she can just make my
night.
Probably also mention, because this is a Scanon podcast, this happens when I was not here, all the great Irish nominees as well. The Breadwinner in animated film. It may be the last year that something like The Breadwinner gets nominated. You heard about this, where they changed the...
They changed it for this year, though.
Did they change for this
year? This year,
What's the change?
The change is basically...
Everybody can vote for it as well.
They did
this year, and it's still going
to... Okay, well, that's good.
I think...
But then the Boss Baby got
it.
They've
got a strong brand on
it. So there's a lot of support there.
Yeah.
And then the Boss Baby got it.
We're not going to get down on this again, are we?
Okay, fine. You can...
Do we have a Boss Baby as a masterpiece?
I love it. No, I haven't seen that. I'm kidding, I haven't seen
it. But a lot of people love it.
I'd like to say there's a few, just the nominations in general, they're just studded with little surprises here and there. So, Denzel Washington getting a Best Actor nomination.
Yeah.
Well, that's the Franco spot, though.
I've heard Roman J. Israel Esquire is not a particularly good film.
Yeah,
but he's generally good at everything
he's
doing.
It's true, he's Denzel. Of course he is.
Yeah.
Logan getting an adapted screenplay nomination.
Very happy with that.
Nice.
First comic book movie to have a proper, non Heath Ledger nomination.
Above the line. I suppose so. Look forward to seeing Roger Deakins getting snubbed again.
What?
That's. Didn't History of Violence get a screenplay nomination?
It got Best Supporting Actor. William Hurt.
Speaking of Best Supporting Actor, I was really disappointed that Michael Stolberg didn't get nominated.
Yes!
He's
really
in three
of
Best Picture nominations.
In fact, he should be called the Michael Stolberg Award.
And
he was the most supporting actor this year.
He really was. In a collective sense, he was like
the most supporting
actor.
And the most supportive. His character in Call Me By Your Name is such a wonderful
film. He kicks that movie into such a high gear.
Well, it's
in that scene.
It's the end.
Yeah, it's the best scene.
But I think it's that's what people keep talking about, obviously, that will be the Oscar clip. I think he's really good throughout that movie.
Yeah, he is.
He's really funny. There's that point where
he's got great timing.
Yeah, he does. When he's screaming down the phone, Mazel tov. He's funny throughout the entire thing.
For everything about him, he looks like. He makes everything look so casual and easy and effortless. And it's not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, he is. He's also in The Shape of Water, which he's great in as well. He's one of the highlights of that,
and
he's also in The
Post.
Yes. It's interesting enough, yeah, you mentioned that he three of the Best Picture nominees. Last time that happened was John C. Reilly in 2002.
For Talladega Nights. That's what it should have been for, my friends.
For The Hours, Gangs of New York, and Chicago. Remember when Chicago swept the Oscars?
He's kind of pretty bad in Gangs of New York, though. His accent's a bit broken. But anyway, that's...
Like, if that's a barrier for entry for Gangs of New York,
I
feel like it's...
There's a lot to love for Gangs of New York. There's a lot to worry about.
I really
enjoy the movie.
Yeah. What?
I said it is an enjoyable
movie. It isn't highly
It's a
enjoyable.
Weird movie. It's a weird hybrid of compromise and originality. It's a strange
cartoon
strange
and history.
It's weird. It's such a weird film.
How about those sets though?
Oh, it's
love them.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah, they're great, aren't they?
Yeah. Have you been there? Have you?
Yeah, I went to
it's
Rome,
isn't it?
Yeah, I went to Zona. It's amazing. Such a great studio. Oh,
yeah, it's amazing.
Love it.
Clint Eastwood's gloves.
I know.
I went the day I went there. I don't know what they were doing with the
really gave you the picture, didn't
he? The Dollars Trilogy
outfit
suit was on the floor, and his gloves were there, and I was like, I could just take them.
You should have. One of them was
even more behind the barrier. I had a serious moment of, oh my god, I have to do this.
The amount of stuff was properly put together when I was there, so I'm
yeah,
somebody's
you
noticed.
Put a picture
yeah,
on,
yeah,
I was like, what the hell?
Was there just one glove? One glove Michael Jackson style.
I'm going to take the other one. I'm going to just walk around.
They had Marty's glasses behind the glass panel.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Fuck,
it's a great studio. If you go to Rome, I'd recommend
it.
The tournament is quite
worth
it.
Anyway, are we still talking about Oscars? We kind of went off track.
If you want to.
No, I'm good.
Oh, we're
and we're all happy with the Oscars?
Thrilled.
As happy as we ever are. So the other big news this week, more Irish related, is the announcement of the lineup of the Audi Dublin International Film Festival.
Edith.
Pretty good lineup, I think.
Quite good, actually, yeah. Opening with Black 47, which is nice. So that's going to be in Berlin shortly beforehand.
Yes, it is.
So no, it's really good. Any highlights, recommendations, anything anybody's particularly excited about or disappointed to miss out on?
Black 47 on Paul Schrader, I'm going to miss the whole thing.
Oh, yeah, you're
away.
Away.
So I'll be only back on the Saturday, so I'm going to miss the
Thursday. Trader's there primarily for the Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
Apparently he's going to hang out on Saturday to see me, but I'll be briefly
with
all
your people.
Yeah.
He's there with his new film, First Reformed, starring Ethan Hawke and Amanda Seyfried, which I'm really looking forward to. Big draw of the festival for me has to be Lynn Ramsey's You Were Never Really
Here.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think we're all looking forward to that.
With
I think about 70% of the people I know with that, I'd say.
The other 30% can't get tickets.
And I'm also
Damon and I were the first movie to sell out, I believe.
Yeah,
really?
Was it?
One of us had to say that.
I didn't mean to sound quite so surprised.
That's not one of my
guys,
I'm afraid. What was I going to say? Yes, I'm also looking forward to Journeyman, Paddy Considine's directorial follow-up to Tyrannosaur.
Yeah, Tyrannosaur was fantastic.
Tyrannosaur
is a shame it's taken him so long to come out with something. So
yeah, but hey, he's back and
as
happy as ever, he's playing a boxer.
I'm not seeing that.
Jodie Whittaker's in it as well,
it's a
clashing with either Donald Foreman's film or one of the other, I can't remember which one, but I'm going to whatever. I can't remember what it is. But
we have to cover the bases, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'll let you know how
Journeyman will be out at some point anyway. I'd rather go see the smaller films
because
big ones will definitely be released
because he said he doesn't want to make any more films.
He had a bit
director.
Of a strop it got a bit of a muted reaction in London, I think. Journeyman,
no,
people liked it at the festival. Some people liked it, some people were a bit I think the thing about it, when you do a boxing film, there's certain tropes and certain beats that you kind of hit. If you've seen enough of them, you kind of have a good idea. So I think if you're going to do one, you kind of have to bring something to it.
You have to punch
it
up a bit.
Yeah.
I think most people thought Constantine could and would because Tyrannosaur is great.
Yeah.
Sure.
But apparently it's something. Some people chat in London are, it's okay. So I think maybe you expect a bit more of a reaction. But I think Constantine, I think, struggles a little bit with confidence anyway. I mean, I saw a Q&A with him in the IFI after Tyrannosaur, and I think he's very down on himself.
It was just very
strange
and
I don't know, I think there might be kind of
somewhat
mental health issues as well. Like, I think he kind of alluded to kind of some struggles either.
I mean, doing the press
kind of
circus is exhausting.
I think he's quite sensitive as well, as a guy.
He's one of these people who probably that level of attention maybe doesn't suit him.
No, I think so. I think that's probably fair. And I think, and
30 grand for a fucking table.
What's that?
Sorry for our part.
Oh, God, yeah, okay.
He steals the show in that film. He's great.
Well, he's great in pretty much everything.
But, I think he's basically, he's kind of, he said he's not doing anything. What's the point? Then he just basically scrubbed out.
Yeah.
So his next day he was tired from that.
To be fair, it isn't like he smashed it. He said, I'd rather smash a glass and cut my wrist than make
No. He just got it down, but he seems to have kind of.
That was a.
He's walked the back a little bit, I think, which is good for, you know, because he should be making films.
He should.
He's a
very good
maker.
The breadwinner, which we mentioned earlier, is
which
the
I'll also miss.
It's on the Thursday, I believe. Thursday night.
Yeah, I'm not here, Darren. Stop keep telling me. We're talking to the audience. Sorry,
I apologize. Just so we're clear.
Yes. I know how this works.
Jay is the audience for the podcast.
God, help us all.
Yeah. But it's on Thursday night. Cartoon Salon. It looks amazing.
It looks great.
Yeah.
It really does.
I'm really looking forward to seeing it, and I will catch it. Whenever it gets released.
So it'll be a week and a half before the Oscars as well, so you can see it beforehand. Because I always find, the release schedule kind of a bit underwhelming with those films, because...
Yeah,
did you see the thing is opening before the Oscars?
Which is opening?
The
It'll be on. You'll get to see it. Because, I mean, if you have to wait, until, is it May?
Yeah, but
I
don't get to see it. That's the point. It's a bit annoying, though, to wait that long.
That's what happens with Song of the Sea.
I don't know what they're doing with that, I have to say.
With that release cycle.
It's a weird kind of thing.
To be honest, it's the same thing. You can't release it at Easter, because Disney always have something big at Easter, and they will crush you under.
But I think we discussed it before. The Breadwinner is hardly... necessarily a kid's film in that regard. It probably had more success in an art house kind of
I mean, if you market it,
so all of them should have been maybe
Academy Award nominee, all of that. Don't market it traditionally like an animation
movie. And I think it could have done well, and I think by the summer it might have just been somewhat forgotten. Unless it wins the Oscar, which it probably won't.
Come on, the Moss, baby.
Coco.
Almost guaranteed.
It is almost guaranteed to be Coco. But anything else sort of jumping out to people in terms of what's on? Favorites or anything that you recommend that people see?
Yes, The Lonely Battle of Thomas Reed, which is a documentary from Fergal Ward, Luke Manns, and Tygo Sullivan. And it's about a farmer that... sorry, just right into my niche now. It's a false report purchase order on his land from one of the, I think it's Intel or one of those companies, and it's his battle to kind of keep his land. So it's kind of very kind of timely in the sense of how we view corporations in this country and how we view our own land as well. And it looks terrific, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. And Kissing Candace as well, which is the Eve McCardle one, which I'm really looking forward to.
Nice.
The new Pat Collins film is going to be
Twilight. 27 minutes.
So what did you say?
You're all over that.
3 minutes for every euro.
3 minutes for every euro. Yeah.
It's worth it. It will be. It's Collins.
Adore Collins. So
Song of Granite was your favorite film of last year.
Yes,
right?
The last first film I've given 5 stars to in 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
1 star for every 6 minutes, Jay.
It is a remarkable film, Song of Granite, and his other one that never really got enough of a release here was Living in a Colded Land,
which I just watched recently. It was absolutely
great.
Terrific.
It's
blew
me away.
Incredible editing rhythm. That's just...
Tygo Sullivan is a
jaw on the floor, like, oh my god, what's happening?
Tygo Sullivan is a magnificent director, editor, and they work so well together. Like, they're amazing.
They're really in sync. Yeah.
Yeah, which helps when you're doing that kind of document.
Yeah.
Would you believe film's a collaborative medium?
Almost like podcasting occasionally.
Indeed.
And there's a whole Law and Order theme, actually, when you talk about like the compulsory purchase order and stuff like that. Apparently that's the big theme running through the festival, or one of the big themes. Right?
They have a strand.
They have
a very exciting panel of lawyers.
Because who doesn't want to talk about Law and Order on television?
I have this awful image of people sat around a table just going, Bueller.
Anyone? And some VR work as well, which they're very excited about. They've got some VR virtual reality, augmented reality.
Okay. Yeah,
so this is stuff they're really, really pushing
for the kids.
And also for adults with interest.
I meant young people, that's all I meant. I meant to catch all those youths. Thank you,
Thank you, Ronan.
Dangerous and unsourced word.
That's what the children like.
Yeah, it is.
How do they fit the VR headsets on over their hoodies?
Yeah, they are. And their sense of entitlement. Sorry.
JMA or may not be joking.
I want to apologize to all our audiences
between
70 and 35.
Yeah. Don't worry. Just ask your parents for a loan for an Native Season ticket.
Indeed.
It'll work fine.
That's how we always got ours.
Back in the day. I'm actually really, really impressed with the lineup as it is this year.
yeah, we'll all be found in various states over the week.
Yeah, yeah.
Later, 15 films.
Darren and I predict, God love me, you're dead. You're going to run yourself ragged.
I'm hoping to do 32 to 35 films, depending on.
Good Lord.
I'm aiming for around the 20-ish mark, probably in
22. Keep on your hand. You're not doing the first weekend, right? So you're
that's true. But I'm just going to end the first weekend.
You are only doing
starting
half
on Saturday. I'm starting on Saturday.
It's straight enough there on the Saturday.
Yeah, he is. For one film. Ozu's final film he's shown.
Yeah, well, he's
in
the performance as well, actually, which I think wrong.
Yeah, but that's not.
Yeah,
I'm not there for that.
It's on 35 millimeters.
It's on 35 millimeters.
It's on 35, so I followed up with the festival because it doesn't mention.
Because the film is not important, apparently.
Well, the cover is celluloid. And nowhere do they mention film itself.
Yeah.
So I sent off an email today saying, you know, is anything actually showing on film? So we've got Performance showing on 35, as well as Dinner at 8 and Grand Hotel. Both of which are, you know, afternoon shows, midweek.
Yeah.
Which I can't get to, I don't think, unfortunately.
But yeah, I'll absolutely be going to all three of those, because why the hell wouldn't you?
And then some interesting statistics from Niall, who is here in spirit.
Are you there, Niall?
Still somehow the most informed person on this podcast, despite not actually being in the room.
Yeah.
But he was talking about the Loss of Savoy one this
yes.
year, which is obviously
yes.
they're splitting up and making it 5 screens.
5?
That was 3.
Just
that's what the rumor was. And it's 5.
Good.
The biggest,
yeah,
the biggest seats.
3 to 5.
Yes,
yeah,
3 to 5.
They're bending about it.
And the biggest capacity is going to be 100. It's whatever. 100 will be the
wow.
biggest, I believe.
I am not
yes.
going to this way ever again.
Capacity of one was
270 or something.
Yeah,
like
something absurd like that. But yeah, basically they've gotten the whole thing down. There were even rumors that they were supposed to be keeping the screen, the original screen itself,
yeah.
at the back. But obviously that's not going to be feasible if you're cutting it up that
yeah.
badly.
Yeah,
Jesus.
But
it's a terrible idea.
Well, I mean, the issue is that you can't fill it for anything but premieres. Like, you can't fill it for anything but
yeah.
big event
yeah.
films. Is the issue.
What really should happen in that regard, and just for that screen only. And what should have happened is that they shouldn't have been allowed to touch it. And if it took some government funding to prop up
yeah.
the screening over a year, which wouldn't be a huge amount of money, relatively speaking, you know, as a kind of subsidy towards keeping that screen open for festivals, premieres, etc. That's what should have been. It
yeah.
shouldn't have been allowed
yeah.
to be touched.
It's
crazy.
As,
it's actually
as,
crazy to do something
yeah.
like that.
As a non-Dubliner, I
yeah.
don't have a huge amount of memories from it,
yeah.
but I think it was
but
the 2012
like, yeah,
Dublin
months,
Film
yeah.
Festival, maybe, where
yeah.
the Raid premiered.
Yeah.
And there was this incredible... The place was absolutely jam-packed. And I think 3 times in the course of the film, the audience just burst into applause.
Yeah.
It's one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had, because people were just like, this is the best thing
yeah,
I've ever
seen. When you're in like, PAX Savoy 1, it isn't
yeah.
packed very
yeah.
often. The
yeah.
last film I saw there was The Last Jedi, of all things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe not the most glorious note to go out
sure.
on. But when you're in there in with a cinema that's packed with people who are feeling a movie...
It's an experience
it
you
is,
now can't get
you
anywhere.
Can't, yeah, because there's no
anywhere.
Cinema of equivalent capacity
yeah,
in Dublin or Ireland.
Extremely disappointing. And
yeah.
what's more disappointing is that nobody seemed to bother or care.
Yeah,
it's like
yeah,
we don't value
very
our own cinema,
yeah.
our own...
It.
And it's not the first time it's happened. We've got rid of cinemas a lot over the years without really
spending
thinking about
10
it.
10 years
yeah.
building one in Galway.
Yeah, well, indeed, yeah. Like, 1 million of that could be put towards the Savoy thing, you know, instead of pissing
yeah.
away, what, 9 million?
I mean, 8.9, yeah.
Yeah. Crazy.
But it's not just about capacity, it's about atmosphere, right?
Yeah, it is.
It's
yeah.
such an old, historic
yeah.
place.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
like, even if they build a new 280 capacity
yeah.
seats.
It's a cathedral for cinema.
You know,
it's a worshipping
it
place.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
it's historical.
And
it's
it is. It's a monument
it's
to cinema as, like, a group experience.
And the last one of kind of the old kind of cinemas that
yeah.
were in Ireland. Because I saw Cliffhanger when he
oh.
this is the go back to
yeah.
this is the 1950s right but he did a thing where he relaunched the cinema with this massive screen because he rebuilt the kind of screen years back, and Cliffhanger was the first film to show on
wow.
the big screen
wow.
and I won tickets to the first show on the first screen and it was jammers at 2 o'clock in the afternoon of
oh,
Cliffhanger
man, I should hope so
93
yeah.
and it was it's so much Cliffhanger I love the fan Cliffhanger it's great.
Absolutely incredible.
It is. It's a great film. I like Ready Harlan.
Yeah,
that's all I tell you. That's all it's.
You
love
Die Hard
2.
Yeah, it's
like. Yeah,
right,
Die Hard 2 is my favorite Die Hard film.
What?
Yes.
No.
You
can
take this out.
Hang on.
Go.
I actually right. happen to think Die Hard 2 is better than Die Hard 3, which is kind of
right. I think Die Hard 2.
How do you think 2 is better than 1?
Because it just. Is.
Oh no.
Stop it.
Anyway. From the floor, really?
Back to Edith.
yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
There are no divers.
yes.
It's rented like the last one, thank God.
So basically, obviously you lose that cinema, you lose a lot of capacity.
Yeah.
But interestingly enough, seat capacity is actually up by about 1,000, because they're showing something like, you know, 20 more films this year.
Mm-hmm.
But that leads to things, strange decisions, like, for example, showing the surprise film in three screens at the Odeon simultaneously. Which is
the Odeon in the Point Village.
In the Point Village. Like,
it's absolutely ludicrous. I know, in fairness, I'm not sure what else they could do, really. I mean, maybe the big screens in Cineworld. Maybe.
Well, nothing comes close to its capacity, but in three screens at the same time seems like an overly ambitious, like, surprise film.
It must be something really good.
That's
neither here nor there when it comes to surprise.
Hold on, last year's surprise film got a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah, it's true. But that
as the program repeatedly reminds us as well, to be absolutely clear.
Yeah. I would, though, in fairness. That's pretty goddamn good.
That's impressive. Look at our taste.
Because you remote a good kill.
The Muppet sequel? Or
oh, that's so bad. Why would you cast Ricky Gervais in the Muppets film? Anyway, yeah.
Well, because he's
a Muppet.
There we go.
He's a worse word. Anyway, keep going.
All right, then. So is there anything else that anybody else has on the festival that we haven't talked about already?
I suppose there's a new Wes Anderson.
On Wednesday. Well, Wednesday is basically your big Hollywood night.
You go
to screen 9 or 17, and you go and you see Isle of Dogs, and then you go and see Red Sparrow, which is basically the Black Widow movie, but with Jennifer Lawrence.
I'm seeing Irish documentaries and foreign films. So that,
I'm
not
that
Isle of Dogs are.
Yeah,
I'm actually really bored of Isle of Dogs, but obviously I'm going to
catch
what
it comes out. I do like Wes.
On Wednesday night, there's Muse showing, which Balaguer shot in Dublin. It was one thing in the program that really stuck out to me today.
Who's in that?
I don't know. Elliot Cowan, Franco Potente.
Franco
Potente. So it's like a horror film shot by Balaguer on the streets of Dublin.
Interesting.
Balaguer
was kind of a mixed CV.
He's very hit and miss for me. I think he's done some really interesting things and some
really
things that I wish I could forget. But
it's a lovely way of describing it.
Yeah. But that's one thing that I'm kind of quietly hopeful for.
I think we all have something we'll be aiming for.
Yeah.
Talk to us the week after.
Recovering.
Or during, Darren not very social during the film festival. Darren just want popcorn and soda. All right, so let's talk then about the top 10.
Let's talk, because
everyone knows you've listened to an hour of us talk about the Oscars and if this is what you really want.
Yeah.
So at number 10, All the Money in the World.
Get me to the cinemas. Yeah, I haven't seen it, so I'll
we all know
it.
How you feel about aging directors.
Yeah, and how bad they are.
Put them out to pasture, or just take a shotgun.
It seems like a Sunday afternoon film at home to watch.
Regardless of anything else that there is about this film and all the controversies that have come with it, but it just does not seem like a film that Ridley Scott of all people should be making. It sounds a bit more like
Mel Gibson.
Or Tony Scott.
Tony Scott would make us far
like,
better.
Tony Scott made
Tony,
it to me insane. This
Tony,
feels like it should be of a piece with that.
Tony Scott's version of this would probably be better. Although this is where Jay says Tony Scott's version of any Ridley Scott
film
would be better.
Because he's a far superior filmmaker.
Okay.
There was a really revealing interview I read with Ridley Scott where he said he was going on about how he pulled off the whole reshoot process.
Yeah.
And he said, that's the good thing about me. If you book me for a film, you have to pay my fee and it's big, but I'll get it for you on time and under budget.
And that's fair.
I think he thinks of himself in a way as a director for hire. So
yeah,
I'm not surprised that he's picked up.
But for his films would suggest that he is.
I'm not defending Ridley Scott.
I'll defend Ridley Scott.
No, I think he's made some incredible. That's his work ethic.
Yeah.
He gets handed a script. He's like, "Yep, I'm doing this today."
Which you have to respect in this day.
Look at what the auteur theory driven sort of like director as like legend has given us in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the issues that we have at the moment, I suspect, are rooted in the fact that we think of like directors as untouchable or mystical or whatever. I say there's something to be said for the guy who turns up on time, shoots it, gets your money back.
I know Tony Scott is a great version of that.
Because Ron Howard is probably a great example, literally doing
Ron Howard is the beigest of films.
He's very
they're all grand.
Yeah.
They're all bland.
He's one of the few people who's a far superior narrator than director.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. This is indeed true. He was a better narrator.
When you say he's a great storyteller, I don't mean
I like Ron Howard. I do like Ron Howard.
Some films are actually pretty good, but only some.
I admire just technically the fact that Ridley Scott was able to do that, completely replace.
Oh, it's really impressive.
Yeah, really,
it's an incredible.
He's pretty much on the zone, though, isn't he?
The fact that you could do that with the film in 3 weeks indicates the biggest problem with the film, which is that it's three different films. You can cut out this actor and it have no impact on the rest of the film.
Yeah, that doesn't say a lot for the film, really. But then again, it does give us another great Christopher Plummer performance.
It's interesting that he snuck into the Oscar nominations
for being not Kevin Spacey.
I think that's an interesting thing. I'm kind of happy with that.
If nothing had ever come out about Kevin Spacey, this film would be complete.
There's no way Spacey would be nominated.
But to see a picture of him, he looks ludicrous. Why wouldn't you cast Christopher Plummer?
Ridley Scott wanted Christopher Plummer, but the studio said no. And in fact, like, for all that we're hailing Ridley Scott as a hero for getting rid of a sex predator, you get a sense that Ridley Scott's attitude was right. Okay, now I can make the film I want.
Thank you, God. Ridley praying for something to get in his face. He probably originated the story. He's like, finally, get this guy off my
set. I can't believe you're joking about this.
Master storyteller.
Stacey is a disgrace.
And Plummer's very good in this. And did you see the cake that he got the cast when he wrapped filming?
No.
Which was literally him, his face superimposed over every cast member on the publicity photo. Like, I love Christopher Plummer.
Plummer's always been good, though.
It's great to see him recognized.
I'm delighted he got the Oscar for Beginners. I say he should have got one for The Insider as well. He's great. He's always been great.
The twinkle in his eye and Oscar night, and I was like, yeah, how do you like that? You know, he just knows.
He'll just skip in, you know, he won't care.
Three months from not getting the role that you wanted to getting an Oscar nomination for it. That's got to be
a baby. That's a story.
I don't know, check you out of
his
bell.
He's got the man to film up.
And at number 9, Ferdinand. Nobody here.
It's an Oscar nominated animation, isn't it?
Except it's not.
Yes.
Is it?
I thought so.
No.
You have the files there.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I'm making them sound.
I have it here, so just.
It's like the buzz
around one of the songs from it.
The Boss Baby, Breadwinner, Coco, Ferdinand, and Loving Vincent.
Loving
Vincent was the Grey Euro one that made a fortune in the IFA. Afternoon screenings.
Someone said
the Post, not to kind of bring it back to that, but the average age of the Post was
Jay was the youngest person in the cinema,
which was very impressive.
And Jay used the word millennials earlier.
I'm never the youngest person in the cinema. Like, this was a rare thing for me.
At number 8, Insidious, The Last Key.
In January, it's a horror film, it's bound to be shit.
How many Insidiouses are there? I think there's four.
The third one wasn't bad. The first one was okay.
And this one has none of the original cast.
It has a supporting actor from the original cast, right?
One.
I'm in.
Yeah, I know.
From the executive producer of Insidious.
From the executive producer, Paranormal Activity 4.
I'm sorry, but any mainstream horror film in January, that is the rule of thumb.
Get Out was released in the States
in February.
I'm talking January. Always January is the ground.
January is the dumb
just
ground.
About.
But ever since I paid good money to see Woman in Black 2,
I
wouldn't even pay bad money to see that.
But it was
tricky. All the money in the world.
At number 7, Darkest Hour.
We have said much of it.
We have. So let's move on.
I haven't seen it.
Well done, Gary.
See it.
I'll see it on TV. I will consider myself to have done something for this world.
A perfectly mediocre BBC Churchill biopic. The only problem
It's you know, badly mediocre.
The problem is that there are two good BBC Churchill biopics.
I think we can probably retire them for a couple of decades now at this stage.
I'm just sad to hear this.
Is that a Churchill you want to die on, Jay?
Yes, it is.
I'm sad to hear this because Joe Wright is a filmmaker who's capable of far better.
He's better than Pan.
Okay.
We'll
give him that.
That silence was uncanny.
Yeah. Atonement was pretty good, though.
That's a great adaptation. I like Hannah.
I really loved Hannah.
I did not.
Hannah is so weird. That's what I like about it.
That's great, but it's not.
None of the invention of anything like that in there. Darkest Hour is so rare.
No,
because chances are he is a director for hire at the moment.
Well, the darkest
Pan.
The Darkest Hour has the overhead shots, but they're, again, they're horrible CGI stuff. Like the
it's
a clever idea, but it's just done in the
most
generic way.
Isn't it sad thing, though, that a good overhead shot is
it's,
one
yeah,
that
it's
what not CGI'd the hell out of? It's nobody is daring just to do something simple, like just have a real life overhead shot. I'm sure it's cheaper than doing it in CG.
That would be why Dunkirk has a Best Picture nomination, but we won't go to that
right
kind of worms. Greatest Showman at number 6.
Yeah.
I'm happy that Hugh Jackman had a good time making it.
That's been hanging around a while. Like,
I heard the songs are great in it. That's the only thing I heard people talk about. That film's okay, but the songs are pretty
good. It's made over €1 million here, which is
not out of my pocket.
A sleeper hit.
It's been out since Christmas, which is good.
Yeah,
it's
good going.
People like Hugh Jackman.
People like Hugh Jackman, Michelle Williams. Who else is in it?
Zendaya.
And that charisma sort of.
Zac Efron.
We're not going with the Efron, no? If you're going for a proper noun, you're going for the Zac.
I'm going for the Zac.
The Zephron.
That's pretty good.
Zephron. Zephron. Like a brand of tractor.
It's just too ethnic. We have to change it. I have this image now of Zac Efron coming over and looking at the Statue of Liberty with a little mustache.
He wins his Oscar for.
Efferetti? No. Efron. Sorry. On that note, then, at number 4, at number 5, Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle.
Also made an absolute fortune.
So well.
€2.5 million.
People like The Rock and they like nostalgia. Who knows?
It's the second worst Rock movie last year. I mean, come on. It just sells itself.
The Fate of the Furious being the worst?
No.
Baywatch.
May actually be the third worst Rock movie last year.
Also
when did
starring
he get,
Zephron.
When did he get Michael Bay to direct Baywatch? Surely
it's a dinosaur.
Slow-mo helicopter shots.
Machine gunning
light cards.
Yeah.
Baywatch.
That's like a better name.
Yeah.
You know there's an obscure blog out there somewhere called
Baywatch.
Baywatch.
I'm not looking that up. I know that by search.
He's
in dark hole of the fall moon.
Jay has already registered the domain.
Yeah. Too late, guys. Too late.
At number 4, The Commuter. Which is the Joan Collette Serra continuing his Liam Neeson on an X premise with Liam Neeson on a plane with Nonstop, Liam Neeson on foot in Run All Night, Liam Neeson in a taxi in Unknown, Liam Neeson on a train.
In The Commuter.
I actually really like this.
Well, I haven't seen this.
There's no real surprise. I mean, you know what you're going to get.
Actually, I would argue this is legitimately better than the other Neeson collaboration.
That's not really.
No, I know.
You know, that's a.
It's
that's
the best Neeson season
a,
movie
know,
since
Damn
Great.
Faint praise.
Yeah. Best Neeson.
That would get me interested. I
yeah.
love
the
great.
Oh, wait, hold on. I've got an even better pitch line here. It's the best movie about the financial crisis since The Big Short. There we go.
I don't like The Big Short.
The Big Short
has to be like
that. Also, it's The Commuter. I feel like that should be enticing enough. Somehow that wasn't a quote they put on the poster, unfortunately.
No.
All right then.
It's The Grey meets The Big Short.
I would watch it.
You
want to
see
the
Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah.
That's so true. Strap no plan.
Liam Neeson in the Kyle Chandler role.
Yeah.
Oh hell yeah. Oh,
but I don't mean losing Kyle Chandler.
Let's not recast it. I can't do that.
I can't emotionally do that.
I'm not ready for that.
Anyway, at number 3, The Post.
I think we know where we stand in The Post.
Perfectly good movie.
Serviceable.
It's
grand.
You know.
Yeah. It's a solid
it's
3
fun.
Stars.
You know, it
yeah,
may
like
well be up there in the
game.
Okay, I gave
it 2.5. Yeah, it would be easy. Oh, God.
At number 2, 3 billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri.
I imagine this has also made a fortune, is it?
This has
it was
so
number
far,
one last weekend.
Yep, 800 or 850,000 euro in Ireland.
You'll
big
get
off
that
contender.
McDonough.
That's found to be.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
there's also a son. Like he's an Irish director.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And you've got that. It's great. You've got an Irish director, but not an Irish film, which seems to be the perfect draw for Irish audiences.
Yeah.
Because there's always a skepticism, I think, generally about.
The last few years, I probably debunked that a little bit.
Yeah,
but before that, certainly.
Yeah.
Before that, certainly.
Yeah.
Up to 3 or 4 years ago, you definitely had that.
Yeah, you had that sort of stigma around it. But yeah, so I think we've argued incessantly about 3 billboards and the backlash or not thereof.
It's not a backlash.
It is a backlash.
It's not a backlash.
It's the dictionary
it's
definition.
Most people with taste have finally seen it.
Is the argument here that we don't like the fact that backlash is used just for people having a negative opinion of something rather than a reaction?
Or just not liking
an opinion.
But it's the dictionary definition of the word backlash.
Yeah, but not used in the context of film. I would argue that's not.
It's a strong negative
counter-reaction. No, a backlash is suggesting that the only reason people are disliking it is because people talked it up so much, as opposed to X amount of people seeing it, everybody else is seeing it, and they would be set down for
Last year's Best Picture nominees, right, included Hacksaw Ridge and La La Land. Which one got the greater amount of outrage, and which one deserved it?
I haven't seen Hacksaw Ridge.
Okay, take a guess.
I saw La La Land and didn't particularly like it. Are you suggesting that the only reason I didn't particularly like it is because...
No, I'm suggesting the only reason that it's been so vocal, the only reason that the response has been so aggressive to it has been because the praise has been so aggressive.
That may be true
on an
overall reaction.
I mean, I feel like the noise signal to noise ratio is so bad because of that.
But
that's what a backlash is.
No, but I don't think that many people had seen Three Billboards before that kind of talk had come out.
Sweeping awards at that point.
Yeah, I know, but then it actually got released in a kind of larger thing, and then people saw it and was like,
Okay, I guess. I haven't seen it, but... I have to say, I really don't know what to expect now between you two, basically.
Yeah, I'm...
My opinions on film are subjective.
I mean, I don't like it as much as everybody else. I think the performances are very strong, but I think the film itself is... People are looking for a certain narrative from it or a certain perspective from it that McDonagh doesn't really offer. You know, people are looking at it now as an Oscar film with something to say, and I'm like, McDonagh's films don't.
No, it's a pulpy.
McDonagh's films don't have any. Why is he trying to say something now
he's not trying to say anything, he's projecting that onto it.
It happened to arrive at a cultural moment where it could have rode that to Oscar
glory. He does touch on stuff and then walks away from it, so that's why people are making the point. He says grand things about America and then walks away without actually delving in any way, shape, form. If he didn't mention those things, just made a straightforward genre film, A, it wouldn't be where it is, and B, nobody would be criticising about it.
Interesting.
So you're saying that the reason it's getting so much criticism is because of the praise that it's garnered?
No, it's not. It would not be considered an Oscar film if it didn't.
It's a film that's been mistaken for a prestige picture. It's not a prestige picture.
But he has brought that. He brought that to the film. The audience didn't bring that to
the
film.
The PR people brought it to the film.
He made the film. That's right. The PR people don't get the blame. He's the one that brought race into it. He's the one that brought sexualized violence against women into it. And then this had nothing to say and was unwilling to say anything about them. Mm-hmm. But he used them as props to make his film a plot device, to make his film move. So he brought it to it, and there's a legitimate criticism around that.
No, it is legitimate.
It's not a very good film. That's my legitimate criticism, regardless of whether you worry about how he brings things to it. So that's the problem with it, I would suggest.
All right. I'm just saying, the intensity of the response to it, in some ways, I think, is proportionate to the praise that it's gotten. Like, we wouldn't be having this argument if it hadn't have been frontrunner.
Because it's crap.
In fairness, we are having this argument because it's number 2 of the box.
So it would have been the same conversation.
I
would have had
this
conversation
about
loads of films. And how over the last years.
All right. Less controversially, at number 1, Coco.
God damn this film. I'm kidding.
You haven't seen it, have you?
No, I haven't. I will see it. I'm going to jump.
Perfectly okay. It is a solid mid-table Pixar film.
So this is the post of Pixar films, is it?
Pretty much. It's the book of life of Pixar films as well. It's grand. It looks lovely. It's got a nice, it's well-structured. It's well-told. It's got nice sort of music running through it.
Darren, you're not... I'm not feeling enthusiasm about it at all.
It's not quite inside out.
It's very boilerplate. It would almost be a Disney film in some respects. You know, like the...
Tangled or...
Like it technically is. But you know what I mean? I mean, like Tangled or like Frozen or even like Mona or whatever.
It wishes it had Frozen's box office, though.
It's doing quite well. It's the biggest film of all time in Mexico and the highest grossing Pixar film in China, apparently.
That would probably make a dollar anyway.
Which is astounding because China doesn't like movies with ghosts in it. But obviously, the female Ghostbusters being one example of that. But apparently, because it's got strong themes of family. and connection as well. It's got
okay.
So where will this particular theme play well?
Yeah.
Wow, that's.
Well, yeah, and it is playing well. It opened at number one. Sorry. Last week it was number two in its preview weekend as well. So it's doing very, very well here.
Yeah, they generally expect, like,
And Pixar generally is kind of, we're at the stage where we're easing kids back into school as well, so you take them to go see
this.
Niles again.
We're not. Some of us may have eased kids back into school somewhere, but not in this group.
I wouldn't know about the youths of today.
Yes, with their uniform.
All right then. So thank you very much, guys. If you are going to ADIF, ScanOn, I believe, has a spreadsheet to help you avoid clashes and to organise your film festivals.
Except you're not going to avoid clashes.
Yeah. There is no avoiding clashes.
No.
There will always be clashes. All right then. Until then, take it easy and see you next week.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.